Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. This is where we celebrate and affirm the gifts of dreaming, coincidence, and imagination. I'm very excited. We have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Nathalie Picard. I mean, that's one of her names. She is born of the Huron-Wendat people, a dreaming people of the Iroquois dreaming family. And part of my excitement is I've known her for a long time. I know that she is a deep dreamer. I know that she is dedicated to bringing back the ancient ways of dreaming and of speaking, the old vocabulary, to her people. And in my case, I knew, I think, one of her ancestors, the person who called me, really, more than anybody else, to what I'm doing as a dream teacher, was born amongst the Wendat or Huron people around 1700, maybe a little bit earlier than that. She was captured and adopted by the Mohawk people, the Kanyakahaka, who were, although related to the Huron Wendat people, were fighting them at the time and on the British side rather than the French side. And I discovered later that actually the woman I call Island Woman in my books had dreamed of a Mohawk attack before it happened. She was 4 or 5 years old, and she dreamed it. But people didn't want to wake up. They didn't want to prepare, so the Mohawk attack succeeded. And she was adopted by the Mohawk, the Kanyakahaka, and she became eventually clan mother of the wolf clan of the people. I learned all this when I did research that I was inspired to do because of things that happened in the dreaming, in the dream time. It's interesting when you could find historical confirmation for things that tells you that if you're going crazy, it's not without a context, and that your dreaming has some grounding, some foundation in history, in the lives of people on this earth. She called me from a lucid dream state when I was between awake and asleep. You've been there probably. I found myself traveling on the wings of a bird, the wings of a hawk, a red-tailed hawk, called by someone I did not understand, and yet I felt I wanted to follow the invitation. I found myself flying north, always north, over what we call Lake Champlain, to a cabin in the woods, somewhere near Montreal, except there were no modern towns, no modern roads. And here's this beautiful grandmother-like woman who is talking to me in a musical language, and she's stroking a belt made of beads, which shows a she-wolf, a wolf mother, and two human children. And I don't understand her speech. It's very beautiful, but I do not speak her language. I do notice the belt. I don't think I knew to call it a wampum belt at that time. And this was the start of an engagement. She taught me many things, and we'll talk with Nathalie in a moment about what some of those things are. But it shook me out of what I'd been doing, and it put me on a path of research and restlessness, which led me to spend time with indigenous people of the Umkwehunwe, as the Mohawk called the first people, to study their languages, to meet their elders and their grandfathers and their grandmothers, and of course, being a bookish historical type, to do a great deal of historical research. And I found that I was dreaming in a certain context of real history. I was dreaming about people who lived on this earth and this planet. I was dreaming of a woman who was possibly reaching into her future, the keys for the survival of her people in a difficult, desperate time. I called her Island Woman, which was a simple way of using a term the Mohawk people use for the Huron-Wendat, which is the people of the island. People of the island, that's where that comes from. And I discovered in the course of my research that she was the grandmother of two famous characters in Northeast history, Molly Brandt and Joseph Brandt, brother and sister. Molly, the last consort of Sir William Johnson, and Joseph Brandt, the leader of Tory and Indian bands who fought the American rebels in the American Revolution. Well, that's probably far too long by way of introduction to myself. Let me say of introduction for Natalie. She's a fantastic musician. She plays the flute like a forest angel. She is deeply, deeply driven by the need to bring back the old ways of dreaming. I know that she loves to bring back the language, the missing words, which is one of the things that I was able to help with a little bit, because dreaming without a woman, I'd get words of the old spiritual vocabulary. And she's a dear friend. Welcome, welcome, Ségon. Bonjour, Natalie. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Oui, Robert, on est voisin à vous. J'endaiwak Natalie Piatti, Wendat and Dee. I'm really happy to talk with you today.
Well, it's so great to be with you. Why don't you tell people how we first met? You reminded me of it. Wasn't it in Boulder, Colorado? Why don't you tell people how we came together?
How we came together? Okay. Well, I traveled. I'm originally from Quebec City, close to Wendake, where the Huron tribe is today, that we call Wendat. We call ourselves Wendat. We took the Wendat name in our language instead of Huron, which is a bit pejorative for us. And so I met the love of my life in U.S., so we traveled to U.S., and I immigrated to U.S., and we were living at the time for 4 months only in Colorado. And one day, I was like an hour from there, I think, and I was really drawn to go to Boulder. And I don't know why, but it was like something was calling me there. So I checked in the newspaper if I could see something to do, to ask Venice, hey, can we go there? And then there was an art exhibition. So we went to Boulder to see the art exhibition. And then I saw that old bookstore, and we love old bookstores. So we went in and checked the books. And on my way out, when I was about to pass the door, I saw a little sign, and it was saying that Robert Moss was coming in 2 weeks to do a book signing. And I was stunned, because years and years and years ago, when I was in Wendake with the Longhouse people, we were dealing with a lot of things after some ceremonies, and nobody was really there to help us, because our elders forgot a lot of the tradition. They're still part of it, but the dreaming was not as strong. And the Book of Robert helped me a lot understand some of the things that was going through, and that the people of the Longhouse were going through. So I was really stunned to see that it was closed. And I said, oh, I need to come and see him. This is amazing. I can't believe that. So 2 weeks later, I was at the book signing, and I registered for his reading class he was giving in Boulder. And the rest is history.
Well, it was a wonderful, wonderful convergence, wonderful coming together. And you then became the first woman of the first person of the first peoples of North America to do my training for teachers of active dreaming. And I felt so humbled and blessed to be able to help to bring back to indigenous people something that their ancestors had taught to me. Because, you know, my story is not the usual story of some white guy going to find some spiritual package from native peoples. They came for me. I mean, the ancestors of the land came for me. And, of course, there are always different levels to these things. I have a connection with an Irishman who came to the American colonies, the North American colonies in the 1700s. And that's part of, I knew the Mohawk very well. And that's part of my story. So there's a sort of family connection. But I actually think the woman that I've called Island Woman, Dewa Duckworth is one of the Mohawk names, I actually think that, you know, she was actually in the way of a great shaman, a great Lazezots. She was reaching into her future, trying to get some information from people, you know, hundreds of years beyond her time, that could help her people get through. And in the process, she reminded me of things that all our ancestors probably knew. I mean, the ancestors of all humans probably knew these things, but we started forgetting them, and we forgot more, and we forgot more. And one of the big things that she taught me was a funny word associated, Ondinok, Ondinok. I don't know whether the word is known amongst Wendat people today. It is originally Wendat Huron. Mohawk people of the Haudenosaunee did not know it when I said it. But it's there back in the writings of the Jesuits who reported from, in this case, Huron-Wendat country in the 1650s. They wrote back to their superiors in Europe. These people, these savages, they called them, of course, these savages say the most important thing that you get from dreams is you see the Ondenok. And then they explained what this strange word means. They said it means the secret wish of the soul as revealed in dreams. So I'm looking at this report from Per Ragueneau among the Wendat in 1650-something. Father Ragueneau, the Ondenok, the secret wish of the soul as revealed in dreams, and they think it's important to honor the wishes of the soul. And the people in the community should get together and help the dreamer to find out what the soul is asking for and do it. And some people turn this into Freudian stuff. It's all about repressed wishes. Well, some can look a bit like that. But I think on a deeper level, what it was telling, what it tells us and what was telling people then is, you have to listen to what the soul wants. You have to listen to your greater purpose. If you don't do that, you'll be less than fulfilled, and eventually perhaps your soul, your greater self, will get disgusted with you and go away. So when I began to understand this funny word that the ancient woman clan mother was saying to me in my dreams, I realized I was being reminded of an approach to healing and dreaming and living that, again, was probably shared by all our ancestors way back then, but which we forgot and which we want to bring back. And when I met you, I thought, well, here is someone of this tradition, of these bloodlines, who knows this and can do wonderful things to help her people and other people, too, return to a healthy, a spirited, a soulful understanding of what this human adventure is about. So as you look at things today, Natalie, and as you look at your life and you look at the dreaming, what can you tell us? I mean, is it coming back amongst the Wendat, for example? Because I understand that through the tragedies and difficulties of history, the dreaming started to disappear amongst the carriers of the tradition. Coming back amongst the Wendat, do you find it coming back amongst people around you? Do you find that your own enthusiasm touches other people?
Well, I would say that it's the same thing as our language. It never disappeared, but it was dormant inside of us because these heritage are really strong. When that heritage is really strong and it just grabs you from inside and it brings you where you need to go. For example, I wanted to play Latin jazz, but I ended up doing a workshop with kids about dreaming, about culture, about singing the songs, and then I was involved in the language. And I remember we did two reburials in Huronia, north of Toronto, and in dreams, we were really connected. I was really connected with the ancestors. They've always been there trying to help us, whisper to us. It's just the understanding, the logical part of us, to go a little bit further that was missing. But a lot of us were still dreaming, but we just didn't know what to do with all these information, what to do. Or we do the ceremonies at the long house. But when bigger things were happening, we were a bit overwhelmed, didn't know what to do. But I remember after a reveal we did, I had the dream the ancestors told me, you'll see in one generation or two generations, the kids will be speaking with that. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know how this is possible because the language is dormant. And then after, because I was teaching art, music, and tradition at the elementary school in Wendake, we started a program of revitalization of the language, and then I could access and be one of the teacher and learner in the program. And then one day, I think it was 2 years after that, I was going outside the school, and I heard a little boy sing Skatendi, I think, and he was singing with the numbers, and like, what are you singing? You never want to sing in the class, and now you're singing the language, and he was counting, and I said, well, I know it all, but I just don't feel like it. And then I realized it was the what the ancestors have told me, that it would come back through the kids, and I could witness that, and it really warmed my heart. And now it's amazing, all the kids that are now grown up, they're in their 20s, and they make rattles, they make they use a language on T-shirt, they use a language, all kinds of ways to try to promote it, and we have signs in the... So the culture is very, has a big birth, and I think the dreaming is starting to guide these people through where they're supposed to go, and I'm really confident that even if sometimes it's not as logical in our head, it doesn't have to be logical if they follow the, that impulsion, that calling that the ancestors to continue. I think they're at the right place. So I'm pretty confident that, I mean, we all dream, like I used to dream a lot about the future, which I was scared. And then when I met you, I understood why I was dreaming about the future. So I was so happy that you could bring back all that knowledge that I was missing so I could connect the dots and live my tradition in a better way, because it's different today. Even the children at the elementary school, they were struggling because the minute they were coming outside the reservation, like we say, they were getting prejudiced that they were singing these songs. And one of the students told me that, and I was surprised and I was saddened by that. So it's really hard to walk in your culture in a modern world, but at the same time, it's so strong that you have to do it. So I think with the dreaming, it's just going to help everything fall in place and open the path for the generations to come.
Well, there's some very good news in what you're telling us. I'm glad that the language is coming back. That is so important because, you know, a language is a whole country. It's terrible to lose your native country with its metaphors and its own figures of speech. I mean, I never became very good in the Mohawk language. I picked up a little bit of Wendat, but, you know, I don't have very much. But nonetheless, I was fascinated with the way that the words work and the way they're put together. I'm laughing because I'm thinking of one of the first Mohawk names I was given. I don't know whether you know this.
What is it?
Well, it means... I'll have to see if it should come back to me. It's funny now it's sticking in my throat. It means he flowers it up. He puts a lot of pretty words. He puts a lot of poetic speech into the world. Wajaani, Rakisan Wajaani. It's funny. It's sticking in my throat. I've never failed to be able to repeat it, but something is sticking in my throat, and it's not coming out straight away. Anyway, it means he flowers it up. He makes pretty pictures. He makes pretty words. You mentioned the dreaming of the future and sometimes the nervousness we might have about seeing things of the future, particularly if they seem likely to happen and we don't know what we can do about them. One of the things I learned from Island Woman's tradition is that seeing the future in dreams was survival technology, a survival tool for her people back in those days, seeing what might happen, and that they also had methods of trying to change the future if you didn't like it. Now, one of the methods that the Mohawk people used, the Kanyangahaga, was play acting. So you see something you don't like. You do some theater, you do some performance, you act it out, but stop short of the really horrible, you know, thing that might have been the outcome of the event that you saw, and you hope that that way you tame the future, you change the future for the better. So what I learned from that tradition, and I'm talking about my research among the documents as well as what my mentor told me in dreaming, just confirmed my opinion that we humans do dream the future, and that if we manage to face the information, confront the information, and clarify the information and apply it intelligently, we can come out with a better future. But Teri Wajaani, it just came back to me. I don't know why it stuck, but Teri Wajaani, Natalie, I don't know if you ever heard that. He flowers it up. He has
he
pretty
what?
Words. He flowers it up. He flowers it up.
No, I haven't
pretty,
heard that.
He has pretty words. He has poetic words. Well, Teri Wajaani.
It's interesting because there's a lot of similarity between Kanyangahaga and Wendat language. At the same time, there's a lot of differences. It's a bit like the Portuguese and the Spanish. And I think that when that, because it was dormant, we have older words that we use. And like the Mohawk, I saw in that they say titsa. You wrote that somewhere in your book, titsa. And we say otsitsa in when that. So we have the O at the beginning, but with time, sometimes part of the words, they disappear. And then it makes it different. So I think it's great because the fact that it was dormant for 100 years,
Yes. Hello?
Yes?
Yeah, we're still here. We're still here. We're going to take a break in a moment. Still here. Well, it was difficult for me to go. I mean, I had to find native speakers to help me understand what's going on in my dreams, because these were not New Age dreams where you understand everything. The woman who was talking to me insisted on using her own language. So when I found people who were native speakers of Mohawk and related languages, etc., I'd sort of meet someone and say, "What is Saria?" thinking that I said, "It's a beautiful day." And they'd look at me blankly as if I'd spoken in Polish or something. I said, "I've got to say it's a beautiful day." "Oh, you're saying that, are you? Well, Robert, it's really hard because your accent is not as today. It's like listening to someone speaking English with a Shakespearean accent." It's very old.
This is awesome. But this is awesome. This is precious because you can bring back all the ways. I love that.
So it's archaic. And also you've got your Anglo-Australian accent and vocabulary that we haven't used for a long time. All right, we're having a wonderful time talking to Nathalie Picard. She's a wonderful musician, dream teacher, word carrier of the Huron Wendat people by birth. We'll be back for more after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of the act of dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dream work techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
We're having the best time talking to Nathalie Picard, Huron Wendat musician, dreamer, lover of language, lover of life, lover of the deeper life. You know, Nathalie, I've thought as I've gone on through life that the ancestors come looking for us. And I'm talking about the ancestors in three senses. The ancestors of our bloodline. Of our genealogy going all the way back to wherever we started, those ancestors. And then the ancestors of the land where we live or travel, those ancestors. And then the ancestors of our spiritual lineage or lineages, which might go beyond anything we initially know about. We might find we've got spiritual relations in traditions we don't initially know about, in parts of the world that we don't know. But they're reaching for us because they're part of our bigger story beyond one place and time. I feel that ancestors of this North American land came looking for me when I moved to upstate New York to live on a farm, and they could get at me because I'm living there with the deer and the red-tailed fox and the cranes, the water birds on the property, and they came looking for me, and they reached me. And then we've also got the whole question of our connection with our dead in a more intimate sense, in a more immediate sense. I don't find it strange at all to find myself talking with, sharing information with, sharing mutual support with people I've known who have died or people a bit further back. How do you view this, and how is it viewed by Wendat people today? Are they comfortable with their relations with the dead and the ancestors, or are there problems?
Well, you have a small minority that is traditionalist that does the ceremony of the longhouse. So I think these people are more open to this because we walk with the ancestors, we dance in the longhouse, we continue the tradition, so they can feel them, they can... All these ceremonies, it's like, I think we're doing them with our ancestors, and we even have, once a year, there's one ceremony is a feast we do in the longhouse for the ancestors. We do it after the sun goes down, and we talk about the people who have passed, and so I think it is something still present and important, and we get information in our dreams also from the ancestors. We get guidance. And you have also the Jesuit came to convert our people. So you have a part of the village that is Catholic that goes to the church and they pray in the Catholic way. So I would not know what they think about that. But I think everybody must experience this connection because the Wendat ancestors are very eager for us to continue and to bring the culture back, and it's happening at a rate that I'm really amazed now when I see what's going on in Wendake, being away from almost 13 years. When I go back in the summer, it's like, wow, I'm always amazed to see how it has flourished. So I would think that for some people it is a conscious connection, for other people it's not conscious, but I think it's there. It's really there. It's in the land too.
There were two rituals for which the Huron Wendat were famous in earlier times. I don't know whether they are still rituals or observed. One was what was called the second burial, you know, when the bones were gathered sometime after death and moved to another place. And the other was what is called in Mohawk, it may not be the same word, the Okiwe, the Feast of the Dead. Are these rituals still celebrated? Do you know?
Well, the Ogiwe, I suppose, is the one we do, and it's not a 10-day, it's just one day. With today's world, everything goes fast, and the ceremonies are usually one day. There are some that are 3 days when we have our midwinter, when it's in January, but we have this one. But we also, unfortunately, we also did a reburial, but it was a reburial a different way, because there were some remains of our ancestors that were in boxes in the vault of museums, and in 2000 we were able to bring them back and we bury our ancestors there. So there was like a feast of the dead. We didn't unbury them, but it was the archaeologist, and I know the nation was working to bring these remains, and when the law changed and you cannot salvage Native American Indian burials, then we were able to bring them back. And also sometimes when they dig to build new buildings in Huronia, sometimes they end up digging in the ossuary where there's many remains of people. So then we go and we do ceremony and we make sure that this place stays like a sacred place. And so that's all it's happening today. But we have a cemetery beside the longhouse for the traditional people, and we have our fake keeper that is buried there. There's only one person so far that is buried there, but she's right beside the longhouse.
Right, right. Yes, I know about the reburial of those remains in the museums and so on. I have a friend of the Haudenosaunee who worked on that, worked for the museum system, and actually had a heart attack through the effect on him, the emotional effect on him, working with whatever had remained with those bones in the museum. So it's good to have had that sorted out and reburied and dealt with. So
what I understood from that, sorry, is also the bones, they were so important for our culture, the Wendat people and Iroquoian in general, I suppose, because it's the memories of our people. So when we did the reburial, a lot of people of us who touched the bones, like when we were close to the ossuary, and if we had to bring dirt or if we touched some of the bones that was in the dirt, it was making a direct connection to the dreaming with the ancestors after that. So that's where we got a bit overwhelmed, and we had some medicine men from the Anishinaabe who helped us also with some rituals to do to separate this life with the other life. But yeah, that was the one that knew the ancestors. They knew we would do these reburials, and that's how they told me, this is how you're going to get back your language, your tradition, because we had to touch their bones. And I was so amazed by that, because that's exactly what happened after. So sometimes a bad thing, you think this is really bad. Actually, it was a good thing, because that's how they brought back the memories. And it's like they knew, because they could see in the future. I had the proof when they told me that. In dreams, they came and they told me all that stuff. And I was amazed that they knew. And I felt like I was not alone in my tradition, because they were there. They knew that we would lose it, lose a lot, and then we would gain it back by reconnecting with them. It was so magical.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so that makes perfect sense, that to be connected with the ancestors in this intimate way, even through the bones being in the right place, that the channels would be open and that the teachings would come through. And our ancestors are there, and we sometimes they need help from us, for example, getting their remains put in the right place on the most basic level, but we can do mutual good for each other. I mean, this is a very important teaching, and most humans who've been spiritually awake have been aware of it. We're talking to Nathalie Picard. We'll be back to talk more about the dream ways of the first peoples of the Northeast and what dreaming can mean in your life today. You'll receive The Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
We're talking to Nathalie Picard, wonderful musician and dreamer of the Huron-Wendat people. We've been talking a bit about seeing the future, dreaming with the ancestors, bringing back ancestral traditions. Of course, central to indigenous dreaming is the idea that we humans are not fully alive unless we have relationships with the animal spirits, the animals, the birds, the fish, whatever. And that this is part of our dreaming, and this is part of what will help us to see things clearly. When I was doing my historical research, I was pleased to see in the accounts of Sir William Johnson, King's Superintendent of Indians, who knew the Mohawk very well. He wrote in his accounts he was paying a certain amount of money, silver coin, to a Mohawk for his dream with the wolf. What he was saying is he was paying a Mohawk to go scouting to get information with the aid of the wolf, maybe by becoming a wolf. It's right there in the accounts, you know, supposedly rational Britishers. Sir Johnson, of course, was an Irishman, for dreaming with his dream of the wolf. So, Nathalie, what's your experience about dreaming with the animals, about having a relationship with what I think the Wendat used to call the Oyarun, the animal spirit? What's your personal experience of this? What do you think about our relations with the animal powers?
Well, I could do an entire show just on that. This is my favorite subject. I have such a close relationship with the animals in different ways, and it's always improving, and I'm always mesmerized by what they bring in my life. What I love a lot is when I dream at night and I dream of an animal that is like, for example, a big, long, huge reptile that I've never seen before. And my friend from Indonesia was in the dream and it's like, what is this huge? It's so big. It's bigger than a human being. And then the next day I go online and I try to find out about that, and I realized it was a dragon of Komodo, which I never saw in my life. But I saw first in my dream. And this happens so often. I saw, like, a bear that was blue and gray. And it's like, everybody was like, let's go see the bear. And I thought, wow, that's a special bear. It's like blue, gray. I've never seen that. And then when I woke up, I went and I look online. And then I figure out that they are the blue bear from Alaska. And they're called the glacier bear. And then the bear started to give me a lot of teachings and dreams and sharing his medicine. And I'm so amazed and I'm so grateful about the animals because, I mean, they're a big, big part of my life. And also, like, maybe you can help me with this one. I was dreaming with my drum once and I met with the orca. And she said that she was hungry because the salmon were sick and then they didn't want to eat the salmon. So she said she was hungry. And then when I came back from the journey, I was wondering, what can I do? What can I do? And I went online and I saw that in Puget Sound, they were having problems with the salmon being sick, and then the orca were not reproducing as much because of that, because there was a lack of food and all that. So I thought it was amazing to get this information, but I felt a bit helpless because I didn't know how to help in just besides telling the story that the whale told me that, but how do you help in this way when you receive that kind of information? I don't know if you have that kind of stuff happening to you.
Well, I think that all natural species, and not just animals and fish and so on, but trees and plants and mountains, are all looking for speakers amongst the humankind to express what needs to be done. And there are lots of speakers. And perhaps the voices eventually will accomplish more than they seem to be doing at the moment. Those voices are unfortunately not very effective in the United States at the moment, but they're still speaking. It's interesting that it is the orca that brought this message to you, because as you know the Pacific Northwest quite well, I think. You've spent time up there. The orca is a chief spirit, I mean, for the native peoples of the Pacific Northwest. In fact, their artists make an image of the orca with two dorsal fins. The orca only has one dorsal fin in the physical world, but the orca with the two dorsal fins is the spirit orca, it's the shaman orca. And they believe that some orcas are actually the embodiment of great shamans. And the orca is the one who is the guardian and leader of the passage to the other world, to the next life, when it goes by water, as it often does in the Pacific Northwest amongst people like the Kwakiutl and the Haida. So there is the orca. So for the orca to speak on behalf of other aquatic species would make sense. So, of course, the salmon is an animal associated with wisdom and knowledge. And in Celtic traditions, it would be the salmon who would speak for all the aquatic kinds. So it's a question that is frustrating to us sometimes and even problematic and painful for people who have powers of insight, the powers of clairvoyance, powers of channeling the spirits, that we get information and we are confused about how to apply it, how to get anything done as a result. I mean, we are human and we are part of related life in an animate conscious universe. So if we are alive and sensitive and insightful, we're going to pick up all sorts of messages. It will not necessarily always be straightforward what to do about them. If I'm given information about a particular location in Puget Sound, and if I can clarify the information to determine that a particular, let's say, industry, company, something like that, is spewing out toxic waste which is affecting the fish, in this case the salmon in that stretch of waters, I might be able to find a way to use that information to accomplish something. I'm not asserting that that would be possible in the case that you gave me. But sometimes, if we can specify the information, get the information more clear, we can find a way to apply it. Personally, as a survival strategy in life, I don't want too much information from my dreams and intuition that I cannot act upon. I don't want to see all the horrors of the world, all the bad things that people do to others, all the natural disasters, except in cases where I can do something about it. So I will actually set up something like a filter or a screen for my own inner life, basically saying, show me what I can use to do some good, or show me where I can be a useful speaker or a useful medium for something. Don't give me more. Give me more that it's possible to work with. So it's a moving example, and I'll go back to my first thought. But species other than human, all alive, all conscious, all with their own needs and agendas, are constantly seeking human speakers to express what they need to speak on their behalf. I remember we did a ritual for the trees once at Mosswood Hollow in the Pacific Northwest, which you know and to which you're going to return. And suddenly we were all gripped by a great sense of pain because we felt the pain of the trees that have been suffering so much from human, you know, for clear-cut logging and other things like that, the forest dying all over the place. We felt the pain of the trees seeking their speakers. So, you know, it's a reminder in very, very emotional terms of how we are related, how we are in this animate conscious universe, how we all need to find ways to look out for each other. All right. On that note, we're going to take one more break. We're talking to Nathalie Picard, your own Wenda musician, dreamer, having a wonderful conversation about what the dreaming is, how to bring more of it back. And in our last segment, we'll talk more about what it means day to day in our lives.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website. Site mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
And you're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Tosasasa Niguro, that's Mohawk. It means do not let your mind fall. In ordinary translation, do not forget. Do not forget what? Do not forget the knowledge of the higher world from which Sky Woman, First Woman, Atta Onsik, the one that called her, came to this earth. I think the creation story is very similar. It's a story of how this world is born when someone falls from another world. Call her Sky Woman, call her First Woman. Her fall is broken by birds, great blue herons in most of the accounts, who carry her down to a formless chaos of water, something very bright and fiery in the sky that gives her a bit of light. It might be a meteor, it might be a kind of fire dragon. And then way down below there are already animals and creatures, and there is already a great turtle on whose back we are all going to live and are living now. And Great Turtle is ready to provide a back for the first woman to live on, but what do you put on it? How has it become livable environment? And different animals recollect that somewhere down in the bottom of the watery abyss, there's something with substance, something like dirt or earth. They don't even know what to call it. And one by one, animals try to dive and get it, and there are different versions of which animal gets it. In the version I've heard, it's a little muskrat who comes back almost dead with a bit of earth between its paws. But it's something to start with, and Sky Woman, first woman, dances. She dances counterclockwise, the direction of expansion in this cosmology, and begins to make an earth for us to live on. Natalie's people have a similar version of this creation story, as I understand it. And one of the elements that I love about it is that there's the idea that if you've lost your world, you've fallen from one world, you can dance a new world into being. And another is the idea in that Mohawk expression, Dosasa Sanya Gumlo, don't let your mind fall from the idea of a higher purpose and that life on earth has an origin and a purpose beyond the obvious. Because they say that when we forget our origin and connection to the higher world, we fall into the dark times again and again and again. And Todadahu, as they say in Mohawk, the entangled one, will rise again as a twisted dark sorcerer who entrap people with his charms and will be in trouble. And sometimes it's hard not to feel that the cycle has turned. We're back in a state like that, but you know what? Dreaming, we create oases of coherence and kindness and creativity. And having a way of regular dream sharing in a family of people joined by their common interests, joined at the heart, joined in their recognition of a deeper world, is a great thing, isn't it, Natalie? It's a great thing to be able to share dreams of the night and dreams of life in the right way and help each other to take some creative action based on those dreams. Isn't that right?
Yes, and I think what people don't realize, as I've experienced it in my workshop I gave in this area, is that we dream for the community. So when they were sharing dreams, they think the dream belongs to them, but then some people were reluctant to sharing their dreams, thinking it belongs to them. But when you start to share, you realize you dream for that person in front that is going through something difficult, and you're bringing a healing to that person, or you're dreaming with the land, and the land speaks to you because it needs something, or something the past speaks to you so you can understand where you are and how you can continue in harmony with that land. So I think people underestimate the power of sharing dreams, because it's a wisdom that we all are experiencing every night we go to sleep, or when we sit quietly looking at nature and thoughts come in our mind. And if we don't share these, we're missing half of being alive, I would say. It's so important to me. I think this is really, really important to build a sense of community and to help this Mother Earth to continue with us with more in harmony and be in harmony with what's around us too.
Niawa, Your Honor, thank you. That's very good. You just reminded us of something essential, and you said it beautifully. Thank you. I mean, dreaming is social. This is something that indigenous traditions recognize. It's something our ancestors knew. It's something that Western psychology doesn't seem to understand at all. Dreaming is social in a couple of ways. First of all, we get out, we travel around, we meet other people. We meet other humans. We meet the departed. We meet the spirits. So it's social in terms of what's happening inside the dream. But it's also social in the community, in this world, in terms of dreaming, as you said, for other people, dreaming messages, dreaming images. Dreaming images, dreaming powerful and healing images that can be given to other people. Just by sharing the right kind of image can do a lot of good. And the dream might be for the well-being of the community as a whole. And this is part of the traditional understanding of indigenous peoples, maybe all our ancestors. So you're reminding us of essential stuff. Dreaming is social. It's transpersonal. It's not just individual and personal. It is social and transpersonal. And if we understand that, we'll realize we can do far more as dreamers for each other and with each other than we previously understood.
And it's also quantum, because it's no time and space. You can travel through time with dreaming and get information and get help and help the future. So I think people don't realize that they're afraid when you start to say that you can. If they see the future, they're afraid. It's the survival, but it's also a knowledge. It's a wisdom. So I think the fact that dreaming is quantum, it doesn't exist in one particular time and space. We are being that are multidimensional. So the more you connect with your dreams and the community, I think you get a fuller life and you can work better on this hurt and harmony.
Well, I think that's right. And I think in our relations with the future, it's not just about seeing the future or even about seeing information we can use to change the future. It might be about creating the future in the dream space. This is where the quantum idea comes in. The quantum people say, you know, talk about the collapse of the wave function, you know. So something becomes a definite event, becomes a particle instead of a wave. We might say that what might go on in dreaming is that we select whether we're remotely aware of it or not. In dreaming, we might be able to choose which event out of an immense number of possibilities is going to come into manifestation. At least there's no harm in trying to look at it that way. And there's no harm in trying to explore how many places we can be at once, how many times we can access at once, how many aspects of the multidimensional universe we can access at once. And again, I mean, you need practice for this stuff. I was reading again today the account of a, well, she was young at the time of the events, of a desert Kahwila woman called Rosa, who was out there, Rosa Modeno, who was out there in California learning from her uncle, who was a dream shaman, Rosa Modesto, learning from her uncle, a dream shaman, how to dream. And he taught her that you can travel to 13 levels of dreaming. You know, you fall asleep in one dream, you wake up another, and then some variant of that goes on. Very few people get beyond two or three levels because they get lost. You know, they're outside their body. Can't find their way back. Have to have a shaman go look for them and bring them home. But there in this very simply told story, it's not complicated in the way it's told at all, and yet its implications are immensely complex and interesting. Wow, the idea that a human mind could access and transport itself, Ruby Modesto, I'm struggling with names today, Ruby Modesto, that a human mind could travel to 13 levels of the real beyond the physical reality and bring back gifts. But these things are possible. And, of course, as you and I know, to get good at it requires practice, 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 and remembering the names, which I'm not doing very well with today. What else would you like to say to us about your personal experience of dreaming and sharing dreams with other people?
It changed my life completely because the fact that I could share, and especially to meet you and to gain back a lot of the ways our ancestors were dreaming, in a concrete way today in the world, it was life-changing, and it makes your life more magical because you feel you're part of everything, and also you don't feel helpless. In a way, you feel like you can communicate and learn, and like you say, the human consciousness is so amazing, and the more you dream, the more you tap into all the wisdom and the different space and the animals and the connection to the past. It just becomes like, it's like a storybook that you could write forever. It's so empowering and enriching. I think people should really consider dream and stop saying it's just a dream and let's wake up and dream, because this is where I think the world is going if we want to live a fulfilling life. And I am really, really, really grateful for you, Robert, for everything you do. To bring back the dream waves and your perseverance and your magical spirit. I'm really grateful and I love you very much and I thank you for this invitation.
Well, I love you too, Natalie, and I'm so grateful to you for bringing back the dreaming in your own life and the lives of those around you. And I'm so grateful for your ancestors pulling me back to the ways that my ancestors knew as well, but maybe forgot even earlier than, you know, others' ancestors have done. As you talk about dreaming as an awakening, when people ask me, bottom line, at what is a dream, I will say a dream is an awakening. You know, it's you're waking up to something beyond the ordinary range of perception and experience, you might need to go to sleep in order to wake up something deeper than you experience in waking life. But then, of course, I'll tell them, actually, you don't have to go to sleep in order to dream. You can shift consciousness quite safely and effectively. No, you don't need drugs to do it. No, you don't need all the extreme painful sacrifices of fasting and the vision quest and so on. You can do that, of course, if you feel you need to do it as for your community and if it's part of your tradition. But you can, it's available to you, you know, anytime you're available to it, anytime you're ready to widen your horizon and awaken the possibilities beyond the ordinary. In ancient Egypt, the word that they used for dream, which we transliterate as reswet, R-S-W-T, actually means an awakening. So it's built into the language sometimes. There's an old Iroquois word for dream, for I dream, which means, I am told, not only that I dream, but that I bring myself good luck. I haven't found a contemporary member of the Haudenosaunee Shoshone who's confirmed this to me, but this is written by one of those early anthropologists, actually, the Tuscarora, J.N.B. Hewitt. They must have known what he was writing about. The idea that dreaming in the language, in this case, I don't know whether which version it is, it's probably Seneca, but in the language is the idea that to dream is to bring yourself good luck, and probably if you don't dream, you're an unlucky person. That's very interesting too, isn't it?
Yes, that's very interesting. Quata squata, we say, and when that we dream.
Okay, well, we've got to get more of your when that dreaming vocabulary into our heads. But not right now, because we have to pause again. We've been talking to Nathalie Picard. What a wonderful conversation. We'll be back basically say dream on and thank you after the break.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Well, Niyama, Nathalie, thank you so much for all you've shared with us. Thank you for your passion for the dreaming. Thank you for bringing back the words and the dreams of Island Woman's people.
Sawakawana to you, Robert. It was my pleasure.
All right. Let's dream on. And as you go forward on your roads of life, your roads of soul, your roads of dreaming, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them. Okay. Anoki wahi.